Tonight's lesson is God's guidance in our money. Back in November of 2008, I stumbled upon a program called Financial Peace University. Holly and I were $19,800 in debt, and it was 1 month before Christmas, and we were living paycheck to paycheck, and life was, it was kind of tough. And I was flipping through the channel one day, and one night, and I stumbled upon Dave Ramsey's program on the Fox Business Network, and it really resonated with me. You know, the way he talked common sense to people who would just call in, you know, with their financial issues, and he would just, you know, really walk them through their problems, you know, in a no-nonsense way. But one thing that I really liked and that caught my eye, or caught my ear, was that he utilized a lot of verses in the Bible in relation to money. And that was really appealing to me. So I watched the program for a couple of weeks until I finally decided, you know, to order it. And we ordered the CDs on audio, and I listened to all 13 lessons within 2 days. You know, just listened to them on the way to work, and then when I get home, you know, I pop in another one. I was just really wanted to understand his program. So Holly and I applied it, and within 9 months, we're completely debt-free, all but our home mortgage. In his program, there's 7 baby steps. And step 1 is having $1,000 in the bank as an emergency fund. Step 2 is pay all your debt off with the debt snowball. Step 3 is having 3 to 6 months in expenses and savings. Step 4 is beginning to invest 15% of your income in Roth IRAs and pre-tax retirement plans. Step 5 is college funding. Step 6 is pay off your home early. And step 7 is build wealth and give. In 1 Timothy 6:10, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. He begins the program in the first lesson by making the distinction that money is amoral. It's not good and it's not bad. You can take a $100 bill and you can donate it to a charity, or you can take a $100 bill and you can donate it to a terrorist organization. It's what we do with our money that gives it meaning. And I found that helpful because, you know, I had, you have certain views about people who have a lot of money or who don't have a lot of money. But, you know, it's not good and it's not bad. Money is just a tool that we utilize to obtain the things that we need to function in life. Baby step 1 is having $1,000 in the bank. And if you make less than $20,000, he recommends to make that having $500 in the bank. And in Proverbs 21:20, in the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has. And the program teaches, in order to get out of debt, you know, to cut up your credit cards. And you're not going to get out of debt if you continue to borrow. And the first step, having that $1,000 in the bank or $500 in the bank, gives you a little cushion between, if you end up getting a flat tire or, you know, some kind of minor emergency comes up where you don't have to turn to your credit card. You have that $1,000 to be able to rely on by utilizing borrowing. And baby step 2, you pay off all the debt with the debt snowball. In Romans 13:8, owe no one anything except to love one another. And in Proverbs 22:7, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is a servant to the lender. I hated credit cards. I hated having them. You know, and I can remember, if we sent in, say the bill was due on the 19th or something, and we sent our bill in on the 15th, you know, and they didn't process it until the 20th. You end up getting a $40 fine or something, and they jack your interest rates up, and it's so you call them on the phone, and I was a slave to the lender. I didn't really have any recourse, but to have to deal with it, and I hated that. And getting that in my soul, when I really started to accept that, that the borrower is a slave to the lender, that I want these people out of my life, and I don't want to deal with them anymore. Kind of inspired me. He also talks about loaning money. Proverbs 17:18 states it's stupid to guarantee someone else's loan. That if you co-sign for someone's loan, you're probably going to end up paying it. Banks' jobs are to make money. They're in the business of making money. So if they deem a person unworthy, of paying back a loan, that's what they do. They're in it to make money. So, but if you go against that and decide to co-sign, odds are you're probably going to end up paying for that loan. My mother co-signed for a loan for me when I was in my 20s, and she paid for that loan. Just where I was at that time. But, so if you're in a tight situation and, family member or friends, sidetrack you a little bit by wanting to borrow money, God's saying it's stupid to do that. And that they probably should change their lifestyle by taking out, getting a loan. So what to do when you find yourself in debt? In Proverbs 6:1-5, my son, if you have become surety for your friend, if you have shaken hands and pledged for a stranger, you are snared by the words of your mouth. So do this, my son, and deliver yourself. For you have come into the hand of your friend. Go and humble yourself. Plead with your friend. Give no sleep to your eyes, no slumber to your eyelids. Deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, and like a bird from the hand of the fowler. So if you've become in debt, God is telling us what we need to do. And that's a picture of a gazelle over there on the right being chased by a cheetah. And in the program, he explains that the cheetah is one of the fastest animals on earth. It can go from 0 to 40 miles per hour in 4 leaps. And the gazelle has to really, bust it to free himself from the hunter. And he has to give it everything he has to save his life. And that's how God is telling us we have to handle our debt. When we find ourselves in debt, we have to deliver ourselves just like the gazelle from the hunter. Have no sleep to our eyes, and we just have to, bust it. Get a part-time job and do the things that we need to do to get ourselves out of debt. And he recommends 6 steps to get out of debt. First, you must quit borrowing money. You can't get out of a hole by digging deeper. Number 2, you must start saving money, specifically to fund your baby step 1 emergency fund. If you are vulnerable to emergencies, you'll never get traction. And 3, pray. Everything is God's. We have the richest Father in the world, and we can turn to Him and pray for help, for wisdom on how to handle our money. 4, sell something. Have a garage sale, run ads, use eBay, sell so much stuff that the kids think they're next. 5, get a part-time job or add overtime where you already work. If you don't have a job, get one. Work like no one else so later we can really work like no one else. And step six, use the debt snowball. List your debts, smallest to largest. Pay minimums on all but the smallest, and throw everything you can at that one. When it has been knocked out, shift to the second one, using everything you were paying on the first, plus the minimum you were paying on the second. Then move on to the third, and so on. If you have a bunch of debts, and your small one is 9% rate, and your largest one is 15%, don't worry about the percentages. You just go for the small one first, pay that off, and it really helps with behavior. And changing that. Once you quickly get one debt out of the way, it kind of gives you a little inspiration to move on and tackle the next and the next and the next. And as Christians, we pay what we owe. We don't dodge any debts. Ecclesiastes 5:5, better not to vow than to vow and not pay. And in Proverbs 22:1, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. Loving favor rather than silver and gold. Baby step three is saving 3 to 6 months of expenses and savings. Genesis 41:35-36, and let them gather all the food of those good years that are coming, and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. Then that food shall be a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land may not perish during the famine. The importance of an emergency fund is an emergency fund is a rainy day fund, an umbrella. It is for those unexpected events in life, a job loss, an unexpected pregnancy, a car transmission going out, and so on. Ask yourself, what would it take for me to live for 3 to 6 months if I lost my income? Your answer to that question is how much you should save. Use this money for emergencies only, incidents that would have a major impact on you and your family. Keep these savings in a money market account. Remember, this is a stash of money. This stash of money is not an investment. It is an insurance you're paying yourself as a buffer between you and life. And I know when we started this program, having 3 to 6 months of our income and savings, we're like, we're not going to get there. that's a lot of money. He makes an illustration on changing our priorities, that showing us that it is possible. If we apply ourselves and change how we think about it, that if your child, if you found out your child was sick, and that there's a vaccine that could save your child, and it costs $5,000, and you had 1 year to get it, and you couldn't borrow that money, could you get it? And when I thought about that, I would get that $5,000, and I think all of us would, in order to save our children. Avoiding get-rich-quick schemes. In Proverbs 28:20, a faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who hastens to be rich will not go unpunished. On cable, there's all sorts of get-rich-quick schemes that you could buy this book and buy a couple of houses and turn them over. Getting rich isn't a quick thing. The greatest wealth-building asset that we have is our income. And it takes discipline and time to save and to guide our money where it needs to go. But if we try, to throw our money at trying to get rich quick and, doing schemes probably just going to fail. And in Proverbs 62:10, if riches increase, do not set your heart on them. Money flows in and out of our lives. You can't handle our money with the clenched fist. And when our money begins to increase, we don't want to squander it either. And he also talks about marriage and money in Genesis 2:24. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. According to several studies, the number one cause of divorce is money problems in America. And I know there was tension in my marriage as far as money when we were living in my marriage with money when we were living paycheck to paycheck. My ego was a little in the dumps because I felt like I wasn't providing very well for my family. And when my wife would, want to do something or if she blew through a tank of gas in a few days by, going to see friends, it would cause a little bit of tension. It's like, well, why did you have to drive all the way out there? So I can definitely attest that when money is tight, that it can cause stress within a marriage. In Ephesians 4:2-3, with all the lowliness and gentleness, with long suffering, bearing with one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. The program teaches you to do a monthly budget, and that you spend all your money on paper before the month begins. So when Holly and I began doing this, I recommend that the nerd does the budget. So I am the nerd in the family who enjoys spreadsheets. So I did a monthly budget, and then we'd have a budget committee meeting before the month began, and Holly and I would sit down and I'd say, okay, here's our bills. Am I forgetting anything else? Is there anything else that we need to spend next month? And she'll tell me whether there's a birthday or something that she needs to get for the house or for Alora, or we decide to have a date night or anything like that. And we put it in the budget, and it totally removes all guilt of spending money, because we have an agreement on what we're going to do with our money, and we move forward with that plan. And I tell you, it felt like we got a raise, in our money, because we knew exactly where everything was going. It wasn't any more I think we might have it, I'm not sure. And it really put a lot of peace in our marriage. And when two people become one in marriage, it's also not wise to have separate money either, two separate checking accounts. If you're going to be one, your money needs to be united as well, and you have to have a straight path forward and a plan on how you guys are going to live into your future. And in budgeting, Proverbs 27:23, be diligent to know the state of your flocks and attend to your hearts. You have to know what you have. Before we started doing this program, I kind of just guesstimated where we were in our checkbook. I wasn't always really diligent in balancing our checkbook. So now we keep our checkbook right next to our monthly budget in the kitchen drawer. So anytime we spend something, it goes into the checkbook, and then it's reconciled on the budget. So we keep track of how we're going along in our finances throughout the month. And it's really easy. And maintaining the four walls. 1 Timothy 5:8, but if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. He recommends the four walls of your home as being food, shelter, clothing, and transportation. That those four things have to be taken care of before you worry about anything else. And in one of the lessons, he said a woman came up to him after the lesson said, you know, I'm really glad I took this, now because I haven't eaten in a few days. And she paid her credit cards, you know, because she was worried about her FICO score, but she wasn't eating. You know, we have to take care of these four walls and then devise a plan on what to do with our finances after that. We're in a much better situation if we take care of food, shelter, clothing, and transportation for our family, then deal with all the other issues. He also discusses children and money, Proverbs 29:17. Correct your son, and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give you delight to your soul. In 2 Thessalonians 3:10, for even when we were with you, we commanded you this: if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. And making that relation with our children, that in order to get something, you have to work. You work, you know, to obtain the necessities in life. You know, we established that in our children early. And with our daughter, you know, we started doing this as well, you know, having just a small commission, just a few dollars a week, that she has to do a few chores, and then she'll receive her commission. That, you know, work and you get money. Baby step four, investing 15% of your income into Roth IRAs and pre-tax retirement plans. In Proverbs 13:11, dishonest money dwindles away, but he who gathers money little by little makes it grow. And in Proverbs 13:22, a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. I'm 40 years old. I'm not real sure if Social Security is going to be there for me when, you know, I'm 65, 70 years old, with the way our government is handling its finances. So we have to start now looking towards our future so we can, you know, have enough there to retire with dignity. And in baby step five, saving for your children's college using tax-favored plans. And this is, you know, for people who are in a situation who are able to do this, he gives them a structured plan. Some may get there and some may not, and that's okay. But if we're able to do this, investing $2,000 per year in an education savings account for 18 years and averaging at a 12% growth, your child would have $126,000 for college when they turn 18. And in Proverbs 22:6, train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. In Proverbs 29:15, the rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. And if we're able to do this, great. If we can't, at least we want to try to instill the value of work into them, because, you know, you can join the military like I did to go through, you know, to get through college, or work, or get scholarships. And in baby step six, pay off your home early. In Luke 14:28-30, suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying, this person began to build and wasn't able to finish. He lays out, I wish I would have, you know, watched this video or had access to this video before we bought our home, because we did everything wrong. But, you know, you live and learn. But he recommends, before you buy a house, having 20% down before you buy the house, and not paying more than 30% of your income. And if you need to rent, that's fine. You know, rent. And probably when we leave here, when we transfer here, I'll rent for the rest of my career in the Coast Guard, because I want to be able to buy our retirement home in cash if possible. But also, you know, if your circumstances change, you know, he also teaches that not, sometimes you might buy a house and your circumstances change and you know, you're not able to afford it. Not to bury your head in the sand, you have to do something about it and take action. And if it means selling the house, sell the house. You know, I see a lot of, I facilitate this course for the Coast Guard, and I see a lot of young Coasties, you know, servicemen, who their take-home pay is maybe $30,000-$40,000 a year, and they're buying a $20,000-$30,000 car. You know, it just doesn't match up with their income, and they'll have on top of that $10,000-$20,000 in debt. It's like, well, how do I get out of this? You got to sell the car, you know, and it's very difficult to get our mind sometimes around taking drastic action to improve our circumstances. In baby step 7, build wealth and give. In 2 Corinthians 9:7, God loves a cheerful giver. And it's very hard to be a cheerful giver when you're barely making it, you know, when you're struggling. So in order to become a cheerful giver, getting out of debt and following God's word will put us on that track. But to put this in context, the average poor person, as defined by the government, has a living standard far higher than the public imagines. The following are the facts about persons defined as poor by our Census Bureau, taken from various government reports. 80% of poor households have air conditioning. Nearly 3/4 of poor households own a car. 31% own 2 or more cars. 97% of poor households have a color television. Over half own 2 or more color televisions. 78% have a VCR or DVD player. And 62% have cable or satellite TV reception. I work downtown Boston, and I see overweight homeless people begging for money all the time. We can make changes to our circumstances in America. Many of us have little because we are living beyond our means. And that was the case for me. We were struggling because we were living beyond our means. It wasn't that I was a bad person. It's just, that's what we knew. That's what we taught. Society teaches us, you know, that if you need something, just get it on credit. You know, I saw my parents, you know, bought everything. I wouldn't say everything, but a lot of stuff on credit. So when I got my first credit card and I had a $2,000 balance, I didn't see that as, you know, debt. I saw it as, oh, I have $2,000 to spend. You know, I saw it as if I had $2,000. And that's the way I progressed with my money leading forward. And I just didn't have the knowledge or the tools to handle my money. But the poor in other parts of the world, Vice America, is very different. This picture of a little girl in Sudan, Africa. That bird behind her is a vulture waiting for her to die so it can make a meal out of her carcass. And in 1993, this photo was taken by Kevin Carter. And Kevin Carter was a photojournalist who, you know, really wanted to make his mark on the world. And he followed tragedy, you know, around the world. He'd go and he'd, you know, follow wars, natural disasters, you know, trying to get that one shot that could get him the Pulitzer Prize. And this is a photo that won him the Pulitzer Prize. It was, I believe, published in the New York Times in 1993. But he didn't enjoy it. The fame and fortune and the accolades that came with taking this photo didn't last long, because every time he would go somewhere, someone would ask him, "What happened to the little girl? What happened to her?" He didn't know. You know, he chased the bird away, he said, but then he had to leave with the crew. So he wasn't able to, you know, find out where her family was or you know, try to get her help. But sure, that resounded on his conscience, you know, made him feel pretty guilty. It was 3 months later he committed suicide by having a hose from his exhaust pipe into his car. But really puts into context what some poor in the other parts of the world have to deal with, vice what we deal with. So we are truly blessed. If we find ourselves struggling, we can sacrifice for a short while to find financial peace. We can disconnect our cable, cut up our credit cards, sell possessions, take on part-time work, and manage our finances according to God's word. So if you find yourself struggling financially, you've mismanaged your money, you're not alone. I've been there. But definitely you can repent and go before God and ask Him for His grace and wisdom in order to be able to handle our finances according to His word and build a better future and security for our family. And if you're here tonight and you're not a Christian and you'd like to get to know God, He loves you and wants you to be baptized. And the water is here and it's ready. And if you'd prefer to do that, you can come forward as we stand and sing.